What's the latest medical news, technology, and innovation to improve our well-being? Let's find out in this week's Health Check.
And we're joined in the studio this morning by Dr. Darren Bowers, the Piedmont Eye Center. Good morning.
Morning.
We're going to talk about LASIK surgery this morning. You all are in, I believe, your 20th year of that. Tell us how that got started, how it's changed, and essentially, you know, what LASIK surgery is.
Yes, one of the, my whole practice, what I do, I consider all very enjoyable because I do cataract and refractive LASIK. But LASIK is one of those areas that is especially rewarding because you can do so much to help patients become less dependent upon glasses and contacts, and it's just been very rewarding. So we started providing it in 1999, so we're in our 20th year now. Before that, I was doing some radial keratotomy. You don't hear about that much, but some patients know what I'm talking about who've had it many years ago. It's where we made little radial incisions in the cornea to reshape in it, and it worked okay. It's not something we do now or even advise. Compared to LASIK, which has just dramatically changed the refractive industry now.
So tell us, you know, what the difference is exactly with LASIK, and I'm going to take it, it's just a much more precise procedure?
It is. Laser-driven, obviously. What we do is, now we use two lasers, really. One that creates a very thin corneal flap that we're able to lift and work under. The treating laser sculpts the cornea depending upon the measurements of the patient's refractive measurements, whether they're nearsighted, farsightedness, astigmatism. And then once the laser is done, the flap is put back and it seals and no stitches are involved. Typical actual laser treatment time, probably 15 to 20 seconds of application. That's how quick it is.
And now you mentioned radial keratotomy, and this is a much more advanced procedure, but over 20 years, this must have changed over time.
Yeah, the radial keratotomy is actually not being done anymore. Right. It's the older style procedure. With LASIK, it has changed. So since we started in 1999, the procedure we're doing now is much different than it was in 1999. For instance, at that time when LASIK was first starting, we would gather measurements from what's called a four-opter, where we, you know, do the, which is better, one or two measurements in the room. We would plug those numbers in manually into the laser. Well, now we're not doing that as much. We can still modify it, but what we're doing now is digitally capturing the patient's refractive error. There are computers out there, what we call a wave scan unit, which digitally captures all the data, even more data than what we could capture in previous measurements. And so we don't have to plug anything in or enter anything. It automatically transfers that information to the laser. It also transfers specific information, almost like a fingerprint, to recognize that person's eye. So if that person's eye is not recognized by the data, then it alerts us. And so it's another safety check, so to speak. We also have eye tracking software now. So if a patient moves their eye under the laser is following, keeping the treatment perfectly centered. So it's just a lot of things that when I tell patients about, it just reassures them, oh, great, I don't have to worry about moving my eye. It's taking care of that.
So
it's
kind of nice.
I mean, it's eye surgery, so obviously you have to be awake.
Exactly.
You're awake. You can't be out.
Yep.
So, and I mean, do you feel anything? And when this happens, and how long does the whole procedure take?
I tell patients they will feel some pressure during the procedure, especially the first laser that creates a flap. It basically secures the eye in place because it needs the eye perfectly still to create the flap that we work under. So it uses a little vacuum during that time. So I always warn patients there is a pressure feeling during that time. It doesn't hurt, but if I didn't tell you about it, it could kind of alarm you. What is that pressure? But it's only on there for about 30, 40 seconds. So we talk patients through it all the time. They hear a lot of positive feedback, like, you are doing great, everything's going perfect. And that is the best reassurance that, you know, they're doing fine. Last thing we want to do is be silent, not say anything, because it's an odd experience. If you don't know what to expect, it is a very odd experience. But overall, I mean, both eyes being treated takes under 20 minutes.
Do people have both eyes done at once?
Yes, we do one eye, and then we follow that with the other eye.
Who's a good candidate for LASIK?
When patients come in, we do more than just a simple screening because it depends more. It's more than just the refractive measurement of the eye. If someone's nearsighted, that's not everything that determines whether they're a good candidate or not. So when they come in, they'll spend up to 2 hours in our office for a complete exam, additional measurements. We look at corneal thickness. We look at the topography, shape of the cornea, looking for degenerative conditions. We also do a dilated exam, making sure there's no macular degeneration or other pathology. So assuming all that is normal and the shape is normal of the cornea and the thickness is adequate, then we can determine whether they're a good candidate or not. One thing we don't want to do is take a poor candidate who's not been properly screened and evaluated and do surgery on them because that could cause problems. So we're very careful about avoiding that.
In some cases, do you have patients who have worn glasses maybe almost their entire lives have their vision 20/20 without any?
Absolutely.
Won't need any glasses anymore?
Is
that what happens?
That's a very typical scenario where patients they've had eyeglasses since they were like 6 years old or something, and they tell me, you know, even afterwards or 20/20, it can take a long time to kind of break the habit. They wake up, they reach for their glasses and realize, wait a minute, I don't need them anymore. It's just interesting to hear all the stories that patients have.
How long does the treatment last? I mean, is it 5 years, 10 years? Is it permanent?
I tell patients that it is a permanent treatment, but the eye can still age, can still change over time. They may get cataracts or diabetes, which can certainly change the eye. But for the most part, it's definitely more permanent or at least more stable than what radial keratotomy was in its day. So we never promise that this is going to be guaranteed lifetime, guarantee you'll never ever need glasses again. But if there are changes over a period of time, usually it's a long time, like 10, 20 years, and it's usually small changes. Again, unless there's something like a cataract that would develop. But cataract surgery can be performed even after LASIK is done.
Is it for people who, you hit 40 or maybe 45 and you start needing the reading glasses, would this help with that?
It can. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. When I first started doing LASIK, I thought it was going to be the 20 and 30-year-olds. Our biggest population of patients probably are in their 30s and 40s, even 50s. Sometimes we see it after the kids are gone and they've got their extra money set aside. I don't know. But it's really, age is really kind of relative. Now, there is a 21 age FDA recommendation mm-hmm. for custom LASIK, which is what we provide. So we do like to see a patient over age 21, but I've done patients in their 70s. And when we do someone who's over the age of 40 who are in bifocals, we basically have two choices. One is to treat both eyes fully for distance, in which they just need their reading glasses, or we can do some degree of monovision, where one eye is for distance and one eye is for their computer or reading. So a lot of people do that, and they really enjoy it.
Is that an unusual or a weird adjustment mm-hmm. for them?
For the patients who are already doing it in their contacts, we know they're going to do great.
Okay.
They're used to it. The patients who have never experienced that will often try them in contacts first. Let them experience what this is like. But I do tell them it can take weeks, if not months, to really get adjusted to it.
Do your eyes adjust to it? I mean, they just get used to working together that way?
Yes. You lose a little depth perception at first, but your brain learns other cues, and it compensates for that. So over a period of a couple of months, most patients who may have struggled early on, most patients by far say, this has gotten better. I don't want you to take this away. Because I tell them, you know, if you don't like it, I can go and treat the other eye fully for distance. So I do have that in my back pocket, but it's rare that I have to do that. Most people, once they realize what it's doing, it is in some way a compromise, but it's a nice trade-off. You're gaining that near vision while still preserving your ability to see at distance.
We're speaking with Dr. Darren Bowers. His specialty is laser, advanced laser cataract and LASIK eye surgery at Piedmont Eye Center. And 20 years of LASIK surgery that you all are celebrating this year. And you mentioned how the technology has come a long way even in those 20 years. Mm-hmm. Is there anything new coming down the pike that you see as far as eye surgery?
You know, I have patients ask me, is now the time to do this? Has the technology plateaued to where I'm getting the best and nothing else is coming? And I'll say, it's never going to stop. It's always going to improve. Ophthalmology is just one of those fields. It's like a moving train. You just have to decide when you want to get on it. Now's a good time to do it because a lot of advances we're taking advantage of. But there are some areas of interest coming in the future, just basically some technology and new approaches on how to provide corneal refractive surgery, how to do it. But nothing as major as when LASIK first came out.
That was kind of the game changer.
It was. Mm-hmm. But so much has changed over that time that they started coming out with a term called eye LASIK, mm-hmm. to better signify that a surgeon who is doing LASIK is keeping up with this growing technology and staying current with the hardware and software upgrades. So it is possible to have a surgeon who is still using older technology, who has not kept up. So it's important for the consumer to ask those questions. Are you keeping up? Do you have the latest things out there? Do you do custom LASIK with custom wave scan measurements, digital input? Do you have eye tracking software? Ask those questions because you want to make sure you're getting the latest technology when you do have your surgery.
All of which you all have there at Piedmont Eye Center.
Yes.
Dr. Darren Bowers, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us. Your website, by the way, is PiedmontEye.com with all the information we've been talking about. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:52 here on The Morning Show. Ashley and Brian with you. We'll talk movies with Mike Mayo. After the top of the hour, number of things coming out on DVD and pay-per-view today. We'll also talk about The Joker, as it had a nearly $250 million worldwide debut over the weekend, but an awful lot of people not happy with it. Did you know approximately 50,000 people in the U.S. visit the emergency room each year due to accidental carbon monoxide poisoning? When winter temperatures plummet and home heating systems run more often, the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning increases, and it's entirely preventable. Change the batteries in your carbon monoxide detector every 6 months. If you don't have a battery-powered or battery backup CO detector, you can get one from Mills Heating. Also, have your heating system, water heater, any other gas, oil, or coal-burning appliances serviced by a qualified technician every year. And in Central Virginia, that means Mills Heating and Air Conditioning. And good news is, they'll do the safety check now for only $59. That's half off the regular price. So call them at 800-622-2804, 800-622-2804. MillsHeating.com is the website. One more quick announcement here. Since we are pretty much split as far as the congressional districts go between the 5th and 6th district, did want to let you know about this coming up tomorrow, 5 o'clock to 6:30 p.m. in the community room at the Bedford campus of CVCC. That's on Venture Boulevard there in Bedford. 5th and 6th District Congressman Denver Riggleman and Ben Klein will hold a joint town hall there together. So if you want to get out there, talk about whether it's immigration, it's impeachments, the economy, how are tariffs going to affect agriculture exports to China from the area, you name it. You can get out there and ask your congressman about it. Once again, 5 to 6:30 in the community room at the Bedford campus of CVCC in Bedford there on Venture Boulevard. All right, this story amused me to no end this morning. I have to admit, you can see it on Twitter or on Facebook. And it's a source I haven't used in a while, Patch, the old very hyper-local news source. And this one reporting from Janesway, Wisconsin. And at Voight Music, they noticed as they were in the shop one day, customers milling around, they look down at the security camera video and they see a man bending over and sticking out of the back of his pants is a flute. Not the front of his pants, the back of his pants. So that old, is that a flute in your pocket? You know, see, that's not going to work here. One of the employees approached him and asked him about it. And according to what they put on Facebook, what Patch has here, he told her, well, I always keep my flutes in my pants.
That's where I keep my flutes, too.
Yes, I know. I don't actually have any flutes, but I don't think that's where I would store them if I did. So she grabbed the flute out of his pants, a daring move, I have to say, given how far down his back of his pants it was. And noticed that the store's price tag was still on it. So if there were any question about the provenance of the flute, it was all answered then. The man fled the store, as you can imagine. And so the flute was saved. If you want to see the shots of this, is say Twitter or Facebook, you can check them out. And there it is. I mean, the flute's just sticking out of the back of his pants.
Yeah, there's no attempt to fully hide it. I mean, it's like pushing the back of his jacket up. I can't tell if it's actually in his underwear as well. I believe it might be.
It looks like it could be because I see that second waistband in there. I kind of think what happened was he was putting his back and he thought his jacket would go down over it. And I don't know if but apparently it did not work that way. And so he got caught. But then here's the question. What do you do with a tainted flute? Because I think the flute was mouth end down in the pants. So I don't know if anybody really wants, you know. Now admittedly, if you're Voight Music, you could just, you know, maybe wipe the flute off, put it back on the rack there, and no one is the wiser. However, they decided that they would take a cue from A Christmas Story, and so they turned the flute into a lamp. And you know the famous leg lamp from A Christmas Story, if you've seen that. I mean, I have not. And so there's some pictures of that they posted to Facebook. And by the way, they don't want that guy coming back in the store anymore, as you can imagine. But, you hear about people shoplifting this kind of stuff, that sort of thing, but I don't think I've ever heard of anyone shoplifting a flute before.
No, mm-mm. I mean, how badly do you need a flute?
I don't know. I mean, are you trying to become is it a flutist or a flautist?
I think it's a flautist.
Yeah, I hear both of them. It's not, I mean, I guess I don't really know that much about flutes. It looks kind of long. It looks like it's probably about 3 feet long. I guess maybe that's normal for a flute. I kind of guess maybe I think of little tiny ones. But if you're going to steal it, I mean, presumably, I guess if it's just an impulse theft, like an impulse buy, and maybe that you just shove it down your pants. But if you were thinking out in advance and you've gone to the music store, it strikes me that you had an intention to steal the flute. Don't you have a better plan than sticking it down the back of your pants?
Yeah, I'm wondering also, what else could you do? I mean, maybe you could stick it down maybe the front, like down your leg, because your leg is long, or in your arm sleeve, and just walk with your arm extended out the whole time.
Right.
I think the back of your pants is probably the worst place to put it.
Although it does provide for funny pictures and video, you have to say that much. So the would-be flute thief foiled there in Janesway, Wisconsin, and we'll see if the authorities manage to catch up with him or not. But at least the flute was saved, and they have kind of a cool-looking lamp now there at Voight Music. So there you are. All right, coming up on 8 o'clock here on The Morning Show, Movies with Mike Mayo. See what's coming in on DVD and pay-per-view, plus talk about the debut of Joker with him. A little later on the program, Jennifer Wolfter is going to join us. She is a Democrat taking on Kathy Byron for the 22nd District seat in the House of Delegates, and so we'll talk with her. Also, what was it that shut down 3 college campuses in Florida? This is quite something else. It might be the most absurd thing of the day. 8 o'clock on The Morning Show.